Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I'll be your host for the show. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone in the literary world. Our show today is going to be a little different from usual. Rather than our regular one-on-one chat, we're going to be opening up our switchboard to callers, and our chat room is also open. If you wish to call in with questions, the switchboard number is area code 646-378-1120. My guest today is Armando Aldazabar, and I'm sure I haven't pronounced that quite correctly. Armando has two books in print, What You Are Turning Me Into and Cocaine Memoirs. Both concern the ugly, ugly world of street drugs. Armando, welcome to the show.
Hey, Simon, how are you?
I'm doing just great. And you?
I'm doing great. And you got the name right, by the way.
Oh, I did? Yeah, it was just a lucky guess. First off, congratulations on your books. They make for very interesting reading.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Why did you select the drug scene as your backdrop?
I would say, personally, having lived in the world and knowing that it's such a big thing now, you know, I mean, it's some of it is a lost cause, and then you have what's good about it.
What is good about it?
The knowledge that comes behind it. If you're a parent, if you're not involved in the drug world, and even if you are an addict, you know, to be able to know knowledge and to conquer this problem that we have today.
Right. You take an unusual approach in your writing. Primarily the viewpoint of the writing. The story unfolds through the eyes of the addict, and this makes for a very non-judgmental view of the issues. There's
right.
good, there's bad, there's indifferent. Was that a conscious effort on your behalf?
I would say so. I mean, the war on drugs, it's labeled right there. It's the war on drugs. People seem to forget about the addict, and that's the one who's actually suffering through this whole war.
Getting started in the book world is not an easy thing. I don't know how many authors I've talked to over the years, but the number is in the hundreds. Did you attempt to take the traditional route of agents and publishers and getting rejection letters, or did you just go straight to print on demand?
Well, with my first book, I got it self-published. I did it all myself. Obviously, it had to go through the company first, but once it was approved and I had the money to afford it, I was able to put it on print. It wasn't something that I wanted to do to begin with. You know, my writing is basically just my way of expressing my feelings at the moment. But I self-published it myself. It was way too difficult to go through the agents and so forth.
Did you even consider taking that route, or you just went, oh no, I'm long in the tooth, right?
Yeah, with the first book, I definitely didn't even consider it. I just went ahead and just did it myself. It was actually my wife pushing me to go ahead and get it published. She recognized it was a good book, so I just went ahead and took her word for it.
Mm-hmm. You said that initially you didn't actually mean for it to be published. You were just writing it for what, yourself and your friends and family? Or?
Well, pretty much for myself. It was just my way of releasing my anger at the time and my frustrations, and just wanted it pretty much like a guide back to who I was at that moment. And after that, I just wanted to clear everything and just move ahead.
Okay, you segue nicely into my next question. Who is Armando? You know, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I was born in Cuba, came to the United States around 1982 when I was about 7, 8 years old. Pretty much trying to establish and adapt life here in the United States, coming from, you know, a communist country at that. Trying to make friends and so forth. And graduated from Florida Metropolitan with film, my bachelor's in business, and there was nothing here in Florida at the time when I graduated to do as far as filmmaking and so forth. We had Universal Studios and so forth, but I kind of took the writing aspect of film, the screenplay writing and character development and so forth, and I got my bachelor's in business thinking I was going to pursue film. And just ended up writing these books, and here I am today.
That's wonderful. But
and a
film
short
film
story.
film and books seem very different worlds.
Well, a lot of films are adapted from books. Even some of the best films out there actually are adapted from books. And my mind, in writing my books, was creating a film. And since I can't write it in a screenplay format, I kind of just took the imagination from creating these characters of film into my book.
Right.
And adapted them into the story I was trying to get across.
Actually, I could see either book translating quite well to the silver screen. You know, your style of writing would make for easy translation. You know, you tend to basically write in scenes.
Right.
And
what I try to create to do is basically write in a one person format, making the reader the main character. So as the story goes on, it's you that's actually the story. You know what I mean? In the books, you are the addict. You are the one struggling. You are the one going through all these changes and developments that person would go in their road to recovery or
right
death.
But I think we should inform all of our listeners. Armando is not an addict. He has just been around the block a couple of times. Is that a fair statement?
Right, right. I'm definitely not an addict.
Right.
Or been an addict. I can remember I've had a lot of friends and family go down that road, and a lot of them didn't make it out of that road. And the ones that are still in that road are headed towards that way, or really, really struggling hard to make amends and change their lives, which is a lot of the message that's in my book. I took it from all these people that I know, and I try to create one person out of like a million. And that's why the book tends to shift a lot.
Right. What kind of reader feedback are you getting?
I'm receiving a lot of good feedback. A lot of people actually, you know, trying to develop this whole addiction thing, and I'm getting a lot of feedback. The Hispanic community is actually embracing it really, really nice. They're wanting me to translate it to Spanish so that they can actually read it, or, you know, be able to read more in their shows or whatnot. So, but I'm definitely getting some very good feedback. I didn't expect half of it, to be honest with you.
I understand that you were actually on Telemundo.
Yes, I was on a TV show called Extra Noticias, which is news. It's kind of like the extra show in Spanish. and spoke briefly about the book, and then we got it, you know, right back into the topic of addiction, because, I mean, the book heavily displays it, so it tends to be where it's drawing to. When the book, I mean, it's not a book about addiction. I mean, it's about a person who is addicted, but the book carries many themes, carries love, carries recovery, carries mending, carries, you know, struggles, frustrations, anger, you can name it.
Where can people get copies of the two books?
The first book can pretty much be bought anywhere online. You can get it at certain stores, some Barnes and Nobles, Orlando, Florida, St. Augustine area. The second book, you can actually get it at Amazon. You can go to the Author House website, also Barnes and Nobles. But it's not, it hasn't made it to the store's shelves just yet.
Oh, but I think it will. I think Cocaine Memoirs actually has a lot of legs, shall we say. I suspect that that this is a book that's going to sneak up the charts, shall we say. And incidentally, folks, if you are interested in purchasing the books, the first one is called
What You Are Turning Me Into.
Okay, and the second book is Cocaine Memoirs. Both are available from Amazon, so don't feel that you have to drive all the way to Florida Barnes and Noble. You can do it from the comfort of your personal computer. I am expecting TJ Hart from the Sky 97.3 to join us. I spoke to him briefly before the show, and I have to share a really cute story. TJ is the news director for the Sky 97.3 at Gainesville, Florida. And
Gators?
Yes. And he flew up to, I think it's Illinois, it's somewhere around the Chicago area, yesterday. It was his parents' 55th wedding anniversary.
And wow.
He called me a little while ago. At the celebration, his nephew persuaded him to attend a baseball game. His nephew is in the state pennant race. I don't know which team he plays for or anything about it. And TJ felt morally obliged to go to the game, only to be royally embarrassed because his nephew introduced him to the coach and players as, "This is my uncle. He played in the state championships 34 years ago."
Ouch.
Yeah, poor guy.
Sure, he wallered in that, huh?
Yes. So he called and said, "I've got one bar left on my phone. I'm hightailing it somewhere where I can get to a real landline, and I'll call in as soon as I can." So hopefully TJ will make it this afternoon. Off the air, you were telling me that your parents don't speak much English, but I'm sure someone has talked to them about your books. And the subject of drugs is a bit of a thorny one. What's their reaction to the book or books?
Well, fortunately, they haven't been able to read the first one. Yeah. And their reaction is great. I mean, they support me no matter what I do, and they've always have, which is one of my biggest dedications in the book. So my first book, it's actually a big apology to my mother. And at the end of the book, the last words is, "Thank you, Mom." She's on the cover. Vice versa with my second book, it's about my father. It's a big apology to my father. He's on the cover. The book ends by saying, "Thank you, Dad." So, I mean, they know that, and they know what the books are about, and they're proud of me. I mean, they know that I'm not trying to write something that's promoting it or you know, giving light to drugs. They know that I'm trying to actually, you know, create a message here.
Right. I understand through the rumor mill that you might have a third book in the works. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, definitely. I have a book in the works, pretty much following the same topic. It's kind of a different twist to it. It's not pretty much anything about drugs. It's literally about conquering the addiction. It's not about doing them or anything, no references to them whatsoever. This one is just about trying to clean up the character and have him rejoice through his recovery. It's not a follow-up to the book or nothing like that, but...
Right. So, is this a how-to, or it's a strict novel?
It's a strict novel. Yeah, I'm going to stick to novels.
I do notice that we have a number of people in the chat room. I want to welcome you to Blogger News on the radio. If you want to call in with questions for Armando, our switchboard number is area code 646-378-1120. Or if you're a little on the shy side, you can just leave your questions in the chat room, and I'll try and keep an eye on it from time to time. Don't think me a poor host by not personally chatting in there. It's a bit difficult. I'm running two computers, two monitors, and I don't know how many windows, just trying to keep this thing going. So, yeah, chat room kind of goes on the back burner.
Well, that's a good thing.
You live in Florida.
Right.
How bad is the drug problem in Florida?
Well, the drug problem is it's huge in Florida. Being that we're right on the coast of everything else, the drug problem is it's insane. Anywhere you go, it's there. But that's really anywhere you look, you know. I mean, it's something that's there, and I mean, it's not really going to go anywhere unless we tackle certain issues. And it's bad. I mean, it's not a good scene.
I live in a very small town in the depths of Mississippi. I'm not even sure it's on anyone's map, you know. Well, no, okay, my wife is scowling at me. Okay, but I mean, you know, it's a town. I think the population is something like 20,000 people, It's also a dry county, believe it or not. How she managed to persuade me to move here, I don't know. But move we did. It was about a month ago, maybe 2 months ago. I walked up to the local gas station to buy a pack of cigarettes. And I was talking to the owner, nice guy. You know, we chat whenever... I go in there. It's that kind of town. And while I was in there, a young man walked in and asked if they sold roses or glass pipes. And I nearly fell over. I mean, there's only one thing you can do with a rose, and it certainly isn't anything I would want to do. So, you know, yeah, the drug trade is everywhere.
The funny thing is that that store owner actually knows what it's for. I mean,
actually, he didn't. He absolutely didn't. You know, he had that look. You know, we're not a flower shop.
He couldn't have thought it was going to be for tobacco. I mean.
Oh, I doubt it. Anyway, they do not sell them. I don't think anywhere in this small town sells glass pipes. So, you know, anyone that's involved in the crack industry, this is not a good place to buy the paraphernalia. You wrote an article a couple of days ago. I don't want to pry into the, you know, personal aspect of it, but right. I found it deeply disturbing. Do you want to give us the thumbnail sketch of that article?
Right. Well, the article was basically written in a hospital, awaiting a pretty gloom moment. My friend had just passed away, and the article just basically became about parenting versus just, you know, what had occurred to my friend, and the fact that a lot of parents, you know, they understand and they realize what's going on with their kids' lives, and not that they're not doing nothing about it, but, you know, being afraid of it's not really going to help the situation, and I was pretty irate at the moment, and I had to get it out there. I knew that wasn't something you guys posted and stuff, so I thank you for posting that. It's just basically, you know, a lot of teenagers, a lot of kids are just rampantly just going down, just passing away due to a substance that can be controlled. So I was pretty upset at that, and also the fact that it's neglect. I mean, I was saying, at that situation in itself, the parents, they pretty much supported my friend, and they didn't understand or know or I guess have a clue to what that money was going to or whatnot. And long story short, he's not here no more, and they're still here.
Right, but this isn't the first friend that you've lost to street drugs.
No, not at all. Not at all. Definitely the recent, most recent. It's been a while, thank God. But no, definitely not. Definitely not.
Man, that is just awful. Well, let's talk about the infamous war on drugs. Is it a lost cause?
Well, I don't know exactly about the war on drugs itself, on the actual substance. That might be a lost cause, because obviously these kids that are in these neighborhoods, they're not growing cocaine plants. You know what I mean? They're obviously getting it from some source, and that's where the war, I guess, needs to be focused versus, you know, little kids on the street. I mean, obviously, that's a big major focus, but they're getting it from somewhere. They're not growing it in their backyard, obviously.
Right. And, I mean, you know, drugs come in a variety of different flavors, shall we say. You know.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, I believe one of the major things is that we seem to forget about a certain drug just to, like, advertise the next or whatnot. Like, for example, like cocaine, it was big in you know, 80s, 90s, but, you know, somehow it's died off, and now we have, you know, new introductions. But we tend to forget, I guess, that that's still there, you know, in any way you want to see it.
Right, but, you know, my point was, you know, some drugs have to be imported. You know, if you look at cocaine, heroin, etc., you know, a lot of that has to come across the borders. But, you know, what I'm seeing as a really, really insidious drug is crack cocaine. And that doesn't have to come across any borders. You know, it basically can be made in anyone's kitchen, and the ingredients, right, even though I personally don't know what goes in it, I've been told are readily available, you know, in most pharmacies.
You can go to Publix and buy it.
I mean, I also understand it's a...
It doesn't take much.
Right. I also understand it's a very dangerous, career.
The crack career?
Well, I mean, cooking it. It has inherent dangers in that I hear it's highly flammable and you can end up dead in no time flat if you're not careful with what you're doing.
Definitely. I don't have much ties to crack whatsoever or ever known anyone really like. I mean, I've seen major people, like, addicted to it. I've never known anyone personally that has come across that.
I spent about 6.5 years working at a homeless shelter. I actually ran a computer lab and a computer classroom, the idea being that we could teach people new skills which would help them get off the streets and get back into action. And crack was everywhere. I mean, these folks didn't have a huge amount of money, and crack's a cheap drug and a very insidious drug. I don't know how many 30-year-olds I met that were living in the body of an 80-year-old.
Right, hence crack houses, I mean, there's no coke houses or weed houses, there's crack houses, though, And not to mention, nowadays, I mean, you don't really have to even go that way. I mean, you have prescription pills even that just, you can get from your cousin who just broke his leg or whatnot.
Right. In fact, let's come back to prescription in a moment. But going back to the war on drugs, what is the solution? In fact, is there even a solution?
Death, drugs, and taxes. I don't think there's a solution for the drug. I think battling the addict and offering education and help and trying to get to the addict. Because if there's no addict, then obviously you can't, there's nothing, the drug dealer itself becomes obsolete. And
okay, I have a caller, sorry, not a caller, someone in our message room, and they have this interesting question, and it concerns who is considered an addict. Are you considered an addict if you tried crack cocaine out, just out of curiosity, one time and never touched it again for close to a year?
my answer to that would be absolutely not. The addict would be the one who's missing out on his kids' birthdays, the one who's not getting along with his wife and pushing his family aside in order to follow this drug, this substance, the one who's inside this box and can't see outside, and he's hurting everyone else. That's the addict to me. Not so much the substance itself. It's just it's what he does to others, and for that drug.
During the time I worked at this homeless shelter, I met I don't know how many people who actually held down halfway responsible jobs. They would get paid either weekly or biweekly. And regardless of the amount of money they earned, it was all gone the very next day.
Lawyers go out of business and multiple other professionals that are heavily addicted, and they actually...
Right. I mean, they would buy a $20, hit of crack, gone in 20 seconds, and then immediately go back and repeat. Uh-oh, it looks like we just lost Armando. I'm sure he will be calling back in very soon. So why don't one of you folks that are listening in call in and ask a question while we wait for Armando to get back online. And with a bit of luck, Armando is back.
Sorry about that. I have no idea what just happened.
Well, one of the ideas that people keep putting forward in the war on drugs is education. You know, would it be worthwhile to improve education for children in our schools to make them aware of the dangers?
Definitely. That's always a plus. That's always a plus, is to reach the young kids before they even have a chance to be exposed to that world. The addict itself, I'm sure he's not trying to hear any education, which is kind of like what I try to do with my book, is that I try to create a mirror for that addict to look at himself. This is what's going on in your life. This is how you're acting. And most of them can probably be like, they could probably agree with me. And hopefully in that, they can see themselves and change. I mean, that's what I try to do in my books.
Well, another option that I've heard put forward frequently is, should there be more addiction recovery projects? You know, should we invest more in trying to reach out to the addict?
Oh, 100%. I mean, it's investing in the addict that's going to stop the whole problem. You're not going to stop the flow of drugs, no matter which drug it is, but you can affect the life of the addict from not doing it anymore, or that young kid from that hasn't been exposed to learn and not get into that world. And then, like I said, then what is the drug dealer going to do if there's no one to buy it?
One of the people in our chat room had another question, and I think it's a very good question. How do people afford the drug habit? I know I couldn't.
I know I couldn't. Like you said, crack is very inexpensive. A lot of kids, I mean, they're teenagers. A lot of them are supported by their parents. You know, mom, can I get $20 to go to the movies, or $50 to go buy this, or, you know, $100 to go on this trip or whatnot? And there you go. And that's a lot of where it's coming from, sadly to say. And like you said, other ones just go to work for it.
You fell off the line as I was talking before, so I'll say it again. During my time working out of this homeless shelter, I knew numerous people that had actually quite good jobs. You know, they would get paid weekly or biweekly, but the very next day they were done. And the reason was that they would go and buy their $20 of crack or whatever it was, and do it. It would go up in smoke in, you know, 20 seconds. They'd be high for 20 minutes, and then they'd go out and repeat the process. And suddenly the $20 cheap habit was an incredibly expensive habit.
Right. And they were still finding the way to get it.
Right. We do have a caller on the line, someone coming in from the mysterious 111 area code, which usually means a blocked caller ID or they're on Skype. Hello, caller. What's your name and what's your question for us?
Hi. My name is Janet. I'm a physician's assistant, and I just wanted to let people know, parents, that when they get prescription drugs for narcotics, to monitor them very carefully if they're for themselves, because kids are taking the tablets and selling them.
Right.
And they can get $20 to $30 a pill for Lortab or any of that. And they also take these prescriptions and put them in farm parties, which is where all these pills go into a bowl, and the kids will just take a handful of them and drink to see what reaction they get, and they don't even know what they're taking.
But that is truly scary.
Yeah, they're called farm parties, yes.
I hadn't heard of that particular aspect, but I mean,
yeah.
You know, many prescription drugs are very, very dangerous. You don't know if you're allergic to them.
It increases your heart rate, so I mean, most of them are heart attacks. They go to these parties and they want to dance all night, not realizing that this pills that they have taken have, you know, excessive amounts of caffeine even in them, and they don't.
Well, they even they're taking hormone replacement therapy, hormone replacement therapy. They're also taking heart medications, pain pills, anything, and they have no idea because they just raid their parents' medicine cabinet, and parents are not monitoring their pills. And that's the whole problem. And then they drink them with the Red Bulls and those drinks, and it just causes havoc on
their
system.
More caffeine.
Yes.
Do you see a lot of cases coming in?
Yes.
You know, you do?
Yes, very much on the weekends, yes.
Wow. Well, what kind of age group?
We're talking anywhere from 13 to 21.
Yeah.
I've had a 13-year-old die 2 weeks ago from that.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's ugly. It's definitely, yeah. And they're smoking the pills as well. I mean, it's not just digesting them. They're snoring them. They're smoking the pills. So I mean, they definitely don't know the consequences to what they're doing. That's why education becomes such a huge tool before they even touch the substance.
Yeah. So I just wanted to let people know out there that's also how they can get their money, because if you have Lortab or any morphine, you can sell those pills in school, Soma, any of that, you can sell them for $10 to $30 a tablet in case they're buying them. And then if they're into Coke, they can go and get Coke.
And they're opiate-based, so I mean, that's pretty much like heroin in a tablet, in a capsule.
Yeah.
So I mean, that leads to heroin. So I mean, they're not understanding how far that pill can actually take them besides, you know, just partying that night.
Okay.
I just wanted to let you know.
Thank you very much.
Thank
you. You're welcome.
One of the arguments, and there's definitely two sides to the argument, is that marijuana is pretty much harmless, and it should be legalized and taxed.
California, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Article 15.
But the other side of the coin says that, no, if you legalize marijuana, it's just a natural stepping stone to other, harder, more grim drugs. Now, I can see both sides of the story, but you know, being an aging hippie, and I'm not a drug user. I haven't smoked marijuana since I was 18, and that was in the very, very early 70s. I know lots of aging hippies who still happily have their occasional joint. And are quite happy with life. They've never moved on to anything stronger. And yet, I know lots and lots of, you know, cocaine users, crack addicts, who, it was a natural stepping stone.
I personally, I mean, you're right. It's both sides of the coin. I don't personally consider marijuana to be a gateway drug, because the normal pot smoker, he's just worried about his next snack, you know, or he's not. It doesn't become like you know, it goes from this marijuana high to, oh, let me smoke crack and, you know, bounce off the walls. So I personally, I think it's just in the person, and it is, if they have this addictive personality or this trait in, or, you know, this disease in them, that's what they do. I mean, they're going to move and want the other drug. I don't think necessarily it's because, I mean, I have actually known addicts that have never smoked pot, and they're, you know, huge cocaine addicts like that, you know.
Right. Cocaine very much is the, the rich man's drug, shall we say?
Yeah, they call them the overnight drugs. You're hooked overnight.
Well, no, I mean, rich man as in, a $20 cocaine baggie isn't going to get you far.
Not at all. You're definitely going to spend about as much as a rich man. Or you're going to need to be rich, one or the other.
Right. Yeah. But, this again goes back to how do you afford it? I mean, cocaine seems to hang around with the rich and famous.
Right. But you got to, also take in mind that a lot of people don't pay for it up front like that. You know, they have friends or that spot it to them, or, you know, that, you know, give it to them with, you know, the consumption that they're going to pay them within a week or so. And that's what a lot of, you know, drug deals gone bad come into play, you know. And a lot of people do that. And not only that, but, I mean, you can go to work, make $10 an hour. At the end of the week, you can go score pretty good, I'm assuming.
Well, I don't know. From what I hear, cocaine is fairly pricey. I would doubt that a $10 an hour job would actually buy you very much at the end of the week.
Well, I mean, it may not buy you very much as far as, like, kilos or, you know, a lot of, you know, high quantities like that, but it'll definitely keep you through the week, I'm assuming. I mean, the real addict would conserve it and make sure that it gets him through the week.
Oh, I'm not, you know, I disagree with you on that. I think the real addict takes the hit and goes, oh, that was good, I need another one.
Oh, definitely, I agree. Yeah, definitely. I agree. But there's a limit that addict knows he can go, and, I mean, after so much, there's really not much you can do, so you just save it for the next day.
From
and like with alcohol, for example, there's so much you can drink before you're passed out and you know, can't move anymore.
Right, but you know, you got to work hard to overdose on alcohol.
Well, yeah, definitely.
You don't have to work nearly so hard to overdose on certain drugs.
I agree.
Yeah, and in fact, you bring that point up in your book. Overdoses are easy. You just keep snorting the lines.
Just keep going.
Yep. And eventually the heart goes, oh, I think I'm out of here.
Yeah, there's so much it can take, I mean. And, I mean, I'm assuming a couple $100 worth of cocaine can get you there, or at least to that point where you're not responsive too much anymore, and then you keep going, like, if you survive it.
Mm.
And then, a lot of it comes from the parent. A lot of it comes from the parent supporting that child and them not aware of what's going on in their child's life, and they're giving them money for this and for that and to go party that Friday night, you know, downtown with their friends. But they're not just partying downtown with their friends. You know, those couple $100 or that $100 that you gave them are going to something else. And I've clearly been through that, like, as far as friends of mine and so forth.
Right. I have another call, and I personally, I think I know the answer to this, but I'll ask you the question. What drug does more harm, crack or meth, or are they the same thing?
Well, that's a tough one. I couldn't respond to that one. That's the same, flipping the coin to the same side.
It is, but I mean, both of them.
Meth has a lot of dangers to it as well. Oh man.
Yes.
Ask Dog the Bounty Hunter in Hawaii. He's hunting them down constantly.
Oh yeah, he seems to specialize in that.
Yeah, and it's just meth patient. Hey, whatever works. I mean, if he's getting it off his streets, then that's the job.
I think the other problem, certainly that I saw, was that there was a lot of bad drugs out there. Bad as in not using
the
best ingredients, and
right.
Definitely had very, very harmful reactions. You know,
I would call that like the greed of the drug dealer, because all they're doing is chopping it up to create more, to obviously make more money. They can turn anything from an ounce to 3 or 4 just from what they put in it. Next thing you know, they have so much that they can't, and it's all just stuff that's put out on the street and it's actually killing people versus whatever the intentions are.
I read a book recently. It wasn't about the drug trade. It was a book about the 21st century global economy. And interestingly enough, there was an entire section about the impact of drugs on the economy. And the author claimed that this sector, I think he called it the shadow economy, but it was a hugely important one. On the one side, drugs had a detrimental effect to our economy. There was, you know, lost hours at work, the extra strain on the health system. But there was also a positive effect, and that was cash entering the economy from other ways. I mean, one obvious one would be money laundering. What's your thoughts on the economic impact of drugs?
Well, my opinion on that is, I guess the economy is in recession, but drug dealers aren't in recession. So that's a lot of the money is going into that versus things that can be improving the economy as well as traits for our lives, you know. So the time lost as far as on the drug war, that's going to happen. You're going to have lost time. It's that's on anything, any case, any search, anything that you're going to do, you're going to lose some time, but it's not giving up.
Right. From my perspective, there is absolutely no glamour in drugs, and there's no glamour in death.
Right.
But
that's why I think drug addicts don't ever look in the mirror. If you've ever noticed, they never look in the mirror because they don't want to see what they've actually become. That's what I try to create in my books, is that mirror. They look in the mirror and they know what they see right away. They know what they are right away. They know what they've become right away because they didn't start like this. So
I find it a very sad situation.
Very much.
I want to relate a story to you just to get your comment or
sure.
comments. My journey to work every morning while I ran this computer lab, it involved taking a little light rail transit system and then walking 4 blocks to the building I worked in. And a block from the shelter, there would inevitably be a crowd of people, all of which knew me by name and would happily say, you know, "Oh, hi, Simon, how's it going?" And they would be smoking joints, doing crack, and it just didn't matter. And this was actually on quite a busy road.
I commend you for your work.
Right. I mean, the cops didn't seem to give a damn, you know, other than, they always tried to clean the area up every July because of a large festival that took place in the city. You know, they would chase all of the druggies underground for a week and try and get rid of the hookers. You know, but I mean, it was all street dressing. I mean, quite frankly, the cops didn't care. I mean, it wasn't worth their time. What were they going to do? They're going to bust someone with crack, then they got to take them to the cop station, book them, put them in jail. These people don't have any money. And a couple of days later, they're back out on the street. You know,
sure.
And repeat as necessary. And, you know, finally they would rack up enough tickets, if you will, that, you know, the magistrate would say, okay, if you can't pay the fines, then I'm going to put you behind bars for 10 days. And they go, okay, yeah, that's 10 days of, you know, three squares. It's warm, it's dry, it's safe.
But a true addict would, I mean, it's still not with their drug. And some drugs like heroin, which will give you the worst withdrawals ever. You won't eat, you won't sleep, you'll be in that hot shower all day. You'll be cramping, back hurting, to the point where they'll probably have to send you to a hospital to be treated.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, the area that I worked in was so bad, if you will, that they actually had little garbage bin-like receptacles where you could put your used needles.
So everything was on the street.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, the idea was that it likely was better that an addict put the used needle in the in the garbage than drop it on the street.
Yeah, that's sad because kids, you know, walk through the streets and so forth.
We have someone in the chat room that has just came up with a comment. And the comment is, that is not true. Cops, that cops don't care. It is a losing battle.
Well, I don't know. If you're in Orlando, Florida, and there's a cop around, and you're doing any kind of drugs, you're guaranteed to be gone. Because they're pretty heavy there. I know that for a fact. And it's a lost cause in certain aspects of it, but in conquering the addict himself, and making him see himself, that's the whole process. Is if you see yourself in that condition, and I mean, eventually you're going to realize that you're in the wrong and you need to change, especially if you have children involved and so forth. I mean, everybody always has a perception of the addict being the homeless person, the sheltered person, the one, you know, begging on the street so that he can go buy his drug, but a lot of them are pretty wealthy.
Actually, watching this story unfold, someone else comes back with that the cops can't go after everyone who uses. And that's a true statement. I mean...
Right. And it's not their job.
Right.
I believe it's... Sorry.
And very much, you know, it is the user that gets busted. It's not
right.
The big dealer. I mean, it may be the street corner dealer and his runner, but it's not the big guy. It's not the kingpin. You know,
right,
is that where the cops need to start focusing?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. If the addict is found purchasing the drug or whatnot at the scene, and yeah, fine, and he arrested him, but their focus has to be on the dealer and where he's getting what from and so forth, not on the addict. I mean, I think therapists and physicians, like the lady that called in and so forth, that's their job. That's our job as, you know, people that are trying to bring forth some kind of light to the situation. That's our job, you know. The cops, they need to worry about the other aspect of it.
The woman that called in was involved in the medical aspect.
Right.
Clearly, she was very concerned. Should there be rules and regs for doctors about, you know, if someone comes in, thou shalt report them?
I'm not a physician or a doctor, so my opinion is that they're the biggest speakers, because they're the ones who know the consequences behind it. They're the ones who witness the death. They're the ones who witness what this addiction really, really does at the end. At the end of the day, they're the ones who are there trying to bring them back to life or trying to regain their strength or fix them up in some way. So I believe that they're the ones who really need to step up, and not step up, because they are doing their job fantastically. I mean, as speakers, and maybe go to schools or so forth and teach the kids right away what they're going to encounter, you know, when doing this drug.
I know, talking to you offline, drugs are something you feel very strongly about. Do you think that mere mortals like yourself and myself could help in some way by putting together a more regular radio program, maybe get some addicts to talk to us?
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, that's one form of reaching out. And I mean, there's people out there that are scared to talk to their parents even. And this could be a form of them calling in anonymously just to voice their opinion and to even ask for help. You know, a lot of people, they tend to, when they can't trust anyone in their family or friends, they automatically trust the stranger. So being the stranger, they might trust the stranger enough to ask for help. And in doing that, it might be definitely a good thing, because it can go from certain things. You can have professionals, medical professionals, as well as any other professionals that are dealing with this. There's a lot of aspects that could definitely help out.
I think it certainly has a great deal of potential, and I think you and I should, you know, maybe talk offline, and maybe we can collaborate and get something moving on this subject.
Right. We're not going to actually stop it. We know that. But if we can bring some kind of light to the subject that a lot of people, from parents to the addict and to those who don't know, gain some knowledge about it. Because, you know, there's parents that are actually ashamed that their kid is doing this and they're not voicing their opinion or doing anything. They're kind of just keeping it under wraps, you know, so forth. You have the addict who's scared to speak up. So I believe that this can become something that they can reach to.
Okay, we have a caller on the line, someone coming in from the 862 area code. What's your name and what's your question for us? Hello, 862.
Okay.
Yes, hello, my name is Kevin.
Hi, Kevin, how are you?
Doing fine, and I am speaking through a sign language interpreter. So
okay.
I'm just listening in, and I have an interpreter who is interpreting the podcast. So I'm just listening in. Thanks.
Thank you for listening.
Well, I can honestly say that is the first time, and I don't know how many hours of broadcasting I've done, but I've heard that. But that makes me happy.
Definitely, definitely. It's a topic to everyone's heart. I mean, everyone knows the struggle behind it, and
right. Yeah. Look, I know that we've mostly talked about street drugs, but let's go back to prescription drugs. They seem to be making the news headlines as well these days.
They've always have. I mean, if you really think about it, back in the mid '90s, there was the Rufinols. They're still talking about Xanax. I mean, so they tend to just push it aside and introduce the next one, and then forget that one still is occurring. And then when it's even more stronger, then it becomes known again.
Right. Do you have any thoughts on the Michael Jackson story?
Who doesn't? Nowadays, who doesn't? You know what? To me, he is a great musician. He was an outstanding musician. I could care less really what else he did in his life. As far as his accusations to the children, that's not my business. And as far as the prescription drugs, it'll do that to you. Like the young lady, like the lady that called in and said, I mean, that's the cause of these pills. There's no ifs about it. He wasn't taking them as an addict, trying, you know, some homeless person. It was Michael Jackson taking the same thing that the so-called addict was taking.
What I found amazing, and of course this hasn't been proved yet. You know, the toxicology reports have not been completed.
Right.
The use of Diprovan. I mean, I really can't imagine why anyone could possibly even want to use the drug. I mean, it's like really bad stuff.
You would be surprised. Look at Heath Ledger. He died with how many prescription pills in his system? I mean, it's a known fact that these prescription medicine, as far as becoming an addict to them and using them on a daily basis, will lead you to death. I mean, I've had my run on them. Not to say anything like that. Just to clarify, last year my wisdom tooth was cracked and it was at an immense pain. And I ended up taking lower tabs and it kept going and it kept going to the point where I wasn't even in control of them. And it turned out that my daughter's first birthday came around and I was withdrawing, trying to get off of that. And it was so bad that I missed her birthday. And to this day, I still get goosebumps about it because that was the no-no for me. I mean, there was no way that I even remotely allowed this to creep in just to mask a pain. I mean, so.
Wow. We have a couple of callers on the line. We have someone coming in from 407. Hello, 407.
Hello?
Hello, you're on the line. What's your name and what's your question for us?
My name is Jamie, and my question, I don't know if it's for you all, but it's for somebody. I'm noticing, actually, I have a family member that is addicted to prescription drugs. Actually, it's an opiate, which is a painkiller. And I'm noticing that the doctors are the ones that are actually getting people addicted to this, maybe not purposely. But I know that he sees several doctors, different doctors. Each week he'll get a new prescription, and it's to the point where he physically gets sick when he doesn't have his medication. He'll go to any lengths to get it. So if we notice, and our society notices, and the rest of the world notices what a problem that the prescription drugs are, why are the doctors still prescribing them the way they are?
Please.
Right, it's like I was saying, it's the overnight drug. I mean, it's overnight. If it's heroin based, from what I've heard, once you take in heroin, you're addicted to it.
We have another caller on the line. Someone coming in from 111. You're either got caller ID blocked or you're on Skype. What's your name and what's your question for us?
Hi, Simon. This is Jan again. I'm the physician's assistant. I called earlier.
Okay, hi, Ben.
I wanted to tell that girl about, you know, when we write a prescription, you came into my office and I wrote you a prescription for Lortab, hypothetically. I do not know that you go to another doctor because, A, you don't tell me. I think it's the pharmacy. I've been trying to get this implemented. The pharmacist has better control because the patient goes to the pharmacy, and if they're able to type in that patient's name, they're able to see all the doctors they go to. I do not know if you have been to six other doctors. I have no way of knowing that. If I did, the way that I would find out, I wouldn't get it till 6 weeks later because we do have a DEA report that lists all the doctors, but I don't get that for 6 weeks, and that's just too late. A lot of doctors now are signing drug contracts that state if you go to another doctor and it's found out, you will be banned from coming to me. But until we get the pharmacy on board to get this implemented so that if I know that Simon, you know, has got another script for Lortab, they would call me and say, hey, you know, doc, you just wrote the script and he just got some filled 2 days ago, then I can deny it.
Am I still on the line? Can I respond? Okay, so my question to that is if you have if you have somebody that's seeing you on a monthly basis and you're prescribing them the same drug on a monthly basis or however often they're seeing you, hypothetically, once again, why do we keep prescribing the same drug that we know they're going to get addicted to after 1 month of use? If you go in with a back pain or a back injury, let's say, you're prescribed that same drug for month after month after month, and then when you no longer need it, you need it. Your body requires it now. I mean, isn't there a way to maybe either drug test to make sure that they're not taking more than they're supposed to be taking, or some way to control it in the doctor's office because that's where they seem to be getting it. Now, of course, they are selling it on the streets and so forth, and I get all of that. But in my particular family situation, he is getting these drugs from his doctor.
Okay,
he's getting them from his doctor. And of course, I have my sister and my nephew who is the one suffering from it. And when he goes to the doctor, he just keeps giving him the same prescription of the same drug that we all know he's clearly addicted to.
Okay, I can't.
I'm just not understanding that.
Okay, I'll try to explain. I cannot understand what that doctor is thinking. He's just in it for the money then. There are pain management doctors that work in a particular way where they monitor the patients, they ask the patient. There are some pains that pain medicine, back pain is can be excruciating if you can't figure out what is the cause of the back pain. And if it's nerve or anything else, that is the problem. The thing of it is you depend on the patient to take it responsibly. Now, if I say take it 1-3 times a day and you don't, I cannot monitor that. You see what I'm saying? And if he comes in and I say, are you taking your medication properly and I'm only giving them a month's supply, that is my responsibility as in the DEA in my protocol as to how that works. If he's going to different doctors, you need to basically somehow drop the word to the doctor that he's going.
Just goes back to what I was saying. You just got to deal with the addict himself. You can't start placing blame on a doctor or the cops aren't arresting them or it just goes back to that person and you have to work with that person themselves. I mean, there's no way other way around it.
It's very frustrating because his whole reasoning for it is, well, this is something the doctor is giving me. If it's something that's so horrible, why would he be giving it to me? Well, when you can't get out of bed because you don't have medication and you're sweating profusely and you're throwing up and just can't move over this drug that the doctor has prescribed to you, I just can't fathom how a doctor could get a patient so addicted and then reverse it with a methadone treatment after getting him addicted in the first place. Now, I do understand that there are patients that should use their drugs the way they should. But even just taking, if they were prescribed 3 Lorotabs per day, after what, obviously I'm not a doctor, I didn't study medicine, but after even just 2 weeks to a month of taking that 3 times per day, isn't that enough to become an addict? And what do you do at that point to stop it? When does it stop?
Well, after taking 3 or 5 a day, you're going to want to take 6 or 7.
Exactly. That's the only thing where I don't understand, and I would
why are the doctors
prescribing it? If it's so fatal and it's so addicting, isn't there an alternate route? That's the only question. Isn't there an alternate route that maybe our doctors can do? I did realize what you said about the pharmacist, you know, the FDA, but it's just a question, I guess. It's a big issue, and you're right, more so than crack or cocaine, or this is what I'm seeing. This is part of my reality, is the prescription side of it.
If you suspect the doctor of doing something wrong, you can report him to the medical board.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that.
But is he doing something wrong by prescribing him medicine that he believes he needs?
I don't know. I don't know what his practice is about. Like I said, every practice is different. Now, if he's a pain management doctor or if he's a regular PP, right now DEA is coming down on general practitioners writing narcotics.
They have to be. Yeah.
They are making them go to pain management doctors. And pain management doctors are even getting strict. So
where they can actually test to see how much is in their system.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
But if he's getting them from 6 other doctors, I'm telling you, there's no way that Dr. A cannot know what Dr. D is doing.
Right.
That's what I mean. I mean, he's got sores on him from the medication. I'm guessing it's the opiates in the medication. I don't know. I feel like it's never ending, and I don't ever see an end to it except for the end of his life.
What's your opinion on the medical part of it, Simon?
Well, I had a go round last year. It looked like a little bit of a stroke thing, and I happily went along with, you know, what the medical folks said, but they sent me to 8 gazillion different places, and 8, you know, if you take 10 doctors, you get 10 different prescriptions, if you will, and I wasn't doing anything bad, you know, I was part of the system. And, you know,
it seems to be.
Uh-oh.
That's not me, right?
No, I don't know who that was. But
seems to be a big case, since, you know, hearing this.
The problem I had was, okay, you know, who do I believe? Should I take, you know, what's behind door number 1 or door number 2 or door number 10? Yeah, my bathroom cabinet was beginning to look like a pharmacy. Yeah, and I didn't take them all, right? And I didn't hold a party either, right?
Oh yeah, that's that work.
Yeah, no, I mean I went back and I said, okay, look, you know, let's pick one. You know, I don't care which one, but I don't much care for the idea of you know, taking 8 gazillion. And, you know, bit by bit, it got resolved. And about the only thing I trust is the baby aspirin.
Well, like I was saying, it goes right back to the addict. I mean, I know you're addicted, but if you know that, I mean, you can look for ways to resolve it, and they're out there. I mean, I know it's easier said than done, but it's working with the addict. It's working with that person. I mean, he obviously has a family. That family needs to be more involved in his recovery. I mean, obviously, they know that the doctor is over-prescribing him or continuing to prescribe him. They are the ones who need to tackle that with the addict. Not with the doctor, not with the law, with the addict. That's where you draw it right there is the addict. If you can work him, then you don't have to worry about that doctor giving him so many because he is taking them regularly like he's supposed to.
Right.
So, I mean, put his child in front of his face. I'm sure he's going to recover right away. I would.
Yeah. And in fact, the only thing I'm addicted to are the baby aspirins, particularly the orange-flavored ones. They're really good.
the cherry-flavored ones?
Too. Yeah. I like them. That's my morning treat.
A baby aspirin.
I do have to bring this show to a close, but Armando, I really want to thank you for taking part, and we will talk offline, and hopefully we can put another show together. And
definitely.
Maybe explore this subject in greater depth.
There's, like I said, there's so many aspects to the subject and so many people out there dealing with it. And, like, you know, we had a physician call in. I mean, obviously, you know, she's interested in her practice and enough to share it with us. So, definitely.
Right. And I do want to wish you all the best with your books. I'm not sure I asked you, how are sales going? Are you encouraged?
The sales are good.
That's wonderful, and I want to encourage all of the listeners to check out Armando's books. They're well worth the effort. It's not what you would call light reading, and he doesn't feature heroes. He just features people, and most of it is kind of dark, but interesting reading nonetheless, wouldn't you say? Armando? Oops, appear to have lost him again temporarily. Okay, folks, this is Simon Barrett from Blogger News Network, that's www.bloggernews.net, wishing everyone a great afternoon. Thank you so much for listening into the program. We will have a text wrap-up on the site within the next hour or so, and there will be a link to the recording. So, once again, thank you for joining us. Have a wonderful day. This is Simon Barrett saying goodbye, and join us again tomorrow. And we'll be talking about the Haley Cummings case out of Florida, a very sad, disturbing case. Armando, you are still with us.
Yes, I am.
Okay, thank you so much, and I will be in touch directly.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Hello.
Hello?